This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Wednesday, the 4th of June. I'm Alec Hogg, and here's your BizNews briefing. Well, since returning from that fractious White House episode, the ANC has been doubling down on race-based policies here at home. These are policies that have caused an implosion of the South African economy. We got further evidence yesterday that in the most recent quarter, first quarter of this year, our economy grew by 0.1%. I mean, that's like pathetic, but let's not even go there. Latest of the doubling downs, though, is the Labor Department. It's demanding that the world's leader in DEI becomes, imposing even greater restrictions on companies, bringing strict racial quotas into the workplace. Here's Connie Mulder of the Solidarity Research Institute, who's been doing a lot of work on understanding the implications of this latest bit of social engineering.
We've already taken the minister to court for contempt of court because they signed a settlement, but that was made an order of a court in 2023. And in true ANC style, they chose to once again completely renege on a true South African solution that we reached, a negotiated settlement with international organizations, with the CCMA here and the courts, and they just decided it doesn't fit them. So they're not going to comply with that. So they've already been taken to court for contempt of court. And then we're taking these regulations on just the irrationality and absurdity of once again trying to regulate the labor market like this. And you can see it playing out in the simple sense that we're talking about having to replace nurses and teachers to comply with targets that some apparatchik somewhere has decided should be fine. When people freely choose, they choose different jobs. They do different jobs based on their gender. And even if you just look at the age distribution, white people tend to be much older than your average South African citizen, which means they are going to be overrepresented in your more senior levels in the labor force, because once you get 20 years experience, you tend to at least be in a more senior position. But there is no consideration of any of these factors at any level. It's just economically active population and nothing else. And you're making it impossible for companies to comply with this. And then if only it were impossible, and then companies could go, at least we tried. But there are some serious teeth in this piece of legislation, and they've thus far, the defense has been, we haven't used the teeth, but we're not willing to put them away. And that means you should assume that they're going to use it. Don't assume that they're not going to use a piece of legislation.
But Connie, this seems to be a practice across the economy. Expropriation without compensation, yes, but we won't ever take anybody's property away. And that line has been swallowed by so many, what some people call useful idiots. From this perspective, from where you're sitting right now, what are you wanting to do, or what can you do to resist or to defend your members of the Solidarity group from the potential implications?
So first, to two people who swallow this, they need to remember that North Korea is officially called the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. And that means if you see that as the epitome of democracy, you need to seriously get your head examined. And that means don't fall for what a policy is called. Go see what can it do and look at the outcomes. And for these policies, it's the same thing. There's a reason that everything is in that legislation, and they haven't removed it. And the pieces that they have removed is also by reason. So what can we do? And the first thing is we're going to court, obviously. We're going to litigate against this, and we've had great success in the past. So that's the one leg that we're definitely going to have to follow, to just once again show the absurdity of bean counting like this the government is doing. But the second part is we are thinking that the ANC is not governing anymore. And that alone anymore. And that means there are GNU partners who are looking at their cabinet publishing numbers like this that says we need to replace white males and women, or risk non-compliance. And there, I think it might be time to start once again making your voice heard and saying, but hold up a bit. Why are we trying to regulate the economy like this? And let's open the discussion. And that's what we've said from the very start, is let's open the discussion about what does economic redress actually look like, and when do these temporary, which I'm putting air quotes, temporary legislation end? Because what we've seen with this legislation is the goal is quite noble. The goal is to create black economic inclusion, and it has almost exclusively created black economic exclusion. It has increased black unemployment specifically. It's more than doubled since 2008. It's increased poverty for the whole South Africa, and it's increased inequality, especially within the black group. Most of the inequality is now driven by inequality within your black race group. It's not between racial groups anymore. And that means we need to have an honest discussion at a political level as well that says, well, this policy just simply is not doing what it should do. It is enriching a small elite, but it's at a massive cost to the rest of us.
Well, enriching that small elite is a theme that Wits Professor William Gumede picked up on and has been rather outspoken about in the last week. He says that there have been hundreds of billions, he actually used the figure of a trillion rand, that has been transferred in wealth from institutional investors, and that means broader society, into the pockets of around 100 politically connected members of the black elite. With so much at stake, you can see why BEE is being so vociferously defended. But Connie Mulder made the point that the ANC does not govern alone anymore, and so my colleague Chris Stain spoke to the Democratic Alliance's Toby Chance, a partner, the partner in the Government of National Unity, about the whole BEE question.
Now, one of the strongest opponents of BEE is Professor William Gumede. Now, according to him, about a trillion rand has been transferred from white and institutional shareholders to maybe just 100 really very rich black people. Is that possible?
Well, it's a staggering statistic, if it's true, and I can't say whether it is or isn't, but it wouldn't be surprising, because if you look at how BEE started in the mid-90s, it was really a way of big companies carrying favor with the ANC and committing their own transformation agenda through the transfer of shares. And one of the problems that has resulted from that is that the beneficiaries haven't really started and grown businesses. They've just had large amounts of shares sort of dumped in their lap. And of course, one of those prominent people is President Ramaphosa himself. So as a consequence, it has meant that BEE has been abused. And if you go into any township, I mean, I work in Soweto, it's my constituency, you'll see that hardly anybody there who is in need of so-called transformation and a leg up has got it as a result of BEE legislation. So we've got to completely rethink it. And, you know, I'd like to see the stats that Professor Gumede has used for that calculation, but it is a shocking number if it's true.
Meanwhile, what is the alternative, Toby?
So in the DA's economic justice policy, we have come up with a plan which we think is more in tune with world trends. And it's not to say that companies don't have a social obligation. They do. So what we're saying is that the sustainable development goals, the 17 SDGs, are the way to go. In other words, a company can choose one or other of those, whether it be reducing poverty or improving educational outcomes or supporting small business. And then they can build their redress policies around that. They can choose what they want to do and how much they want to spend, but also they can choose the ways in which those outcomes are measured. And I think the policy is something which would also be attractive to multinational companies. As you know, there's a big question mark today over Starlink and other potential investors in our telecommunications infrastructure, where the the legislation states that they have to hand over 30% of their business to black-owned, you know, shareholders. And that is a disincentive, the same is happening in the mining industry. You know, the recent mining legislation tabled by Minister Mantashi is having the same chilling effect on investment. So if you look at the SDGs, which are generally accepted by all companies, South African or otherwise, we think that would be something that companies would understand and be able to buy into. But, you know, again, it goes back to the point. These have to be supplementary to the fundamental need to grow the economy. That has to be number one. And I mean, we saw yesterday that the stats saying that the economy only grew by 0.1% in the last quarter, which is a shocker. So that's got to be our focus. In the GNU, that's the DA's focus 100%. And any policy that does not result on evidence-based likelihood of growing the economy and creating jobs should be abandoned or scrapped. That's the strong view. And we're taking it into every portfolio that we belong to. Certainly in trade and industry, we're making those points very, very clear.
Well, you've got to do more than make the points very clear, Mr. Chance. You've got to act. I think that's a very strong message that's coming through the BizNews tribe on what is happening now in the Government of National Unity, which, sure, it's better than the DA being on the side and having all types of chaos, but there's a very, very strong view in the tribe that it's time for action. Somewhere else where there's time for action is in Fort Hare. That scandal continues to simmer. You might recall what happened there, or if you haven't been following the story, they were selling degrees to worthies, many of them very senior people in the ANC, including the Premier of the Eastern Cape, who's still the Premier of the Eastern Cape. My colleague Chris Stain has been following this story to the degree that the two attorneys who were brought in to investigate, when they found stuff that those in power didn't like, they got charged and thrown into jail, and they are now having to defend themselves for the information that they have been putting out into the public domain. Well, Chris spoke to Grant Abbott. He's the General Secretary of the National Tertiary Education Union. This is the only union that's speaking out against ongoing corruption at Fort Hare University.
Now, you've watched the interviews we've done with the corruption-busting lawyers who now find themselves in the dock alongside some of the people they had investigated at Fort Hare University. What do you make of that case, Grant?
It's just absolutely, it's absolutely crazy. The stories around Fort Hare, around those lawyers, it's a bit, it's a strange one for us because of our involvement with Fort Hare. At one point, we were working against BCHC in the sense that they were acting for the university. And now you just see how that whole thing has come full circle. And I think there's been a lot of people being thrown under the bus to kind of cover up for some people. And I don't want to say that the vice chancellor is the kingpin because there isn't much evidence of it. But it really strikes me as incredibly difficult. And I'm happy to say this because we've said this before on mainstream media, is that either he is completely complicit in everything that's gone on in Fort Hare, because we have to ask the question, how is it that 26 employees and service providers are arrested? But few questions are asked about him, even though all 26 of those were employed under his tenure. Now, that means he's either complicit, in which case he should be criminally investigated, or he knew nothing about it, in which case we say he is actually, sorry for saying it, but he's incompetent. How can you not know that was all happening under your watch? And are those people really the main victims or the main perpetrators, rather, of the crimes going on there? It's absolutely nuts. And how complicit even in it is the state, so to speak? You know, looking at the interviews of Conradi and Sarah, it's clear that there's that it's clear to me as a layperson. I'm not a lawyer, but it seems clear that there is some form of victimization, even against them as high profile lawyers. How can people get away with that? You know, and I don't know if you know, with our president, before he was dismissed by Forte and then reinstated by CCMA, he was kidnapped and tortured on a Sunday evening in, I think it was April 2022 or 23, for 7 hours. There's been charges that have been that have been laid by us with IPED, but nothing's gone further than that, to the best of our knowledge. And it was by members, at least some of those were members, recognized members of SAPS. So there's been no further movement on that case. So, you know, what is happening here? It's really, really, it's not good for where the sector is. This is higher education, for heaven's sake, you know. This is a place where people are supposed to be learning, we're supposed to be training the leaders of tomorrow. It's not supposed to be a place of corruption and commodification of education where people are enriching themselves. It's training leaders of tomorrow. And but we're not really seeing that. And that's really the sad thing for us. That's why we're speaking out and saying this has to stop.
You've got to just pick up on what he was saying there. You know, what the heck is going on in our country? You start off with Professor Gumede saying that a little cabal of 100 politically connected black people have used BEE, used the color of their skin to make untold billions. A trillion rand, he says, has been transferred to them. And then they double down on a bad policy that has given us the highest unemployment in the world. Why? Just to keep the money flowing into their coffers? Could that be? And then you get the stuff like going on at Fort Hare, open and shut case, and the people who've been investigating, well, they get thrown into jail. Hey, man, come on. Can't continue. Surely not. But let's look on the bright side. South Africa won gold again at the Chelsea Flower Show, the most prestigious event of its kind on earth. Our colleague Linda van Tilburg caught up with botanist and landscape designer Leon Kluge. She discovered the victory was a triumph of logistics and South Africa's amazing fynbos.
The flowers are the main part of the garden, and to get them there logistically is quite a nightmare. So we harvest flowers from about 30 different cuff flower farms throughout South Africa. So that starts from KZN north to Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and all the way up to the Cedarburg. So it's quite a wide range. And all of these farms need to harvest at exactly the same time during the week, which I'm already in London. So everything happens on the phone and with your thumbs crossed. So we have from the Monday to the Wednesday to harvest all of those flowers. And all the farms need to do it at exactly the same time so we can receive it at exactly the same time at Cape Town International for chicks. And from Department of Agriculture. So that can make it logistically a little bit tricky. And all the flowers are cut and they're kept at 4 degrees all the way from the farm right when I open the box at our stand at the Chelsea Flower Show. And 25,000 stems, so it's about 11 pallets and a lot of boxes. So it's a huge consignment. And if it rains during the week of harvesting, that is a big problem. So that's our biggest fear. I think for the whole build is the weather during the harvesting week. And if it rains, we can't harvest any flowers because water on the flowers, by the time it reaches London, they would be black and marked. And then we can't use it. We'll lose a point and then it's not a gold. So that's our biggest fear. But luckily this year, no rain that week.
Well, can you describe what it looked like?
So the garden, the concept is, it is mostly the Cape flora of South Africa. A big reason why we use so much of the Cape flora is it's so famous as a cut flower around the world. And the flowers need to last 4 weeks out from when it's cut. And one of those weeks is completely devoid of water, no moisture whatsoever. There's not a lot of cut flowers that can do that. You can try that with your rose. It's not going to work. Proteas, on the other hand, wonderful for that. If you're in the north of South Africa, more towards the Bushveld, Johannesburg, it's winter time. There's not much in flower now, just a little bit of aloes. And aloes we're not allowed to send over. So we are really confined to the proteas and fynbos, which is so amazing because it's so unique from anywhere in the world. So we're not complaining. So the garden has two sections, two corners. Each one has a beach. The one is the Indian Ocean. The other one is the Atlantic Ocean. The Atlantic Ocean, more cold-loving plants, more cold colors, and that represents the West Coast. The Indian Ocean side is more towards the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. It's got warmer colors, reds, yellows, oranges. But the influence of these two oceans, the warm and the cold, with the high mountains, gives way to a lot of little microclimates in our mountainscapes. And that is why we are so rich in our biodiversity of flora, in especially the southern part of Africa. And that's why we are the flower basket of Africa. We have this woven basket around our garden, portraying that saying of the flower basket of Africa. And it also brings in a human element. Basketry is such a famous craft in Africa, especially in South Africa. Then connecting the two beaches is this canyon that cuts through this big mountain of fynbos that we have. That inspiration came from the Storms River mouth. I walked over that little hanging bridge on the sea and looked into this canyon. It's so beautiful. This dark black water, amber water, with these beautiful cliffs full of very famous plants that's used around the world as pot plants and garden plants. And that's exactly what we did. So we have this canyon. It snakes through. You can't see to the other side clearly, but still cuts all the way through. So there's nobody looking back at you with a camera. And then we depict Streptocarpus. There's some Sandersonias and ferns and orchids in these canyons that show people that all of these very famous plants that's used in all the nurseries around the world actually is rooted back in Africa.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Wonderful story, and well done again to the team that went and conquered the Chelsea Flower Show for the second successive year. Well, our great rugby rivals to the east might not have fynbos, but they're sure getting popular amongst the Americans. Immigration to New Zealand is booming, as we hear from Stuart Nash. He's the former New Zealand Minister for Economic Development, and he's now making a business in the field of bringing immigrants in. He spoke to our partners at Bloomberg.
All your listeners and your viewers know that America's polarized at the point in time, more so than it's been for a long, long time. We've got many Americans wanting to settle in New Zealand. As Greg Foran said, we're seen as a safe country. For example, our police don't carry guns. There's never been a school shooting in New Zealand. We've got a first world banking system. We've got a very stable government. And, of course, we've got a very pristine environment. The sort of things that Americans like. And, you know, we're seen as an oasis at the bottom of the world. And at this point in time of global uncertainty, geography is just as important as anything else, I would say.
I'm just wondering how New Zealand itself is making itself attractive to these Americans and other potential residents and citizens.
Well, we don't necessarily have to make ourselves attractive. I think we are, by the very nature of the fact that we're 10, 12... 1,000 miles away from the world's trouble spot. You had Keir Starmer come out and talk about putting his armed forces on ready just in case Putin does something. You've got a very high level of uncertainty in the Middle East, obviously, South China Seas, who knows what's going to happen there. And obviously the US is probably more polarised than we've seen for a long, long time. You jump on a plane, it takes a while to get to New Zealand, but by virtue of that, you're a long way away. So what we see at Nash Kelly Global is a lot of people are telling us they are looking for a safe haven. I mean, in the past, a lot of these people were looking for tax havens. Now they're after a safe haven for them, their family, and also their money and their wealth.
Well, after decades in the doldrums, nuclear power is making a strong comeback, as it's seen as the best way to provide electricity for the artificial intelligence boom. Jefferies, which is one of the top investment analyst firms in the world, their partner, Brent Thill, spoke to Bloomberg about the impact of Meta's deal with Constellation Energy. Let's have a listen.
Meta's playing big for the AI game. They're going to spend over $65 billion this year in CapEx. And they have one of the highest increases in terms of absolute dollar spent on CapEx to fuel this AI generation. So they're a huge player along with the other hyperscalers. Amazon and Microsoft are obviously going to spend more in CapEx, but the percentage increase is the highest at Meta. And I think what this deal signifies is that we're at the beginning of this AI adoption curve. It's going to take, again, inning one, if you will, of a baseball analogy. And this is going to be a multi-decade transformation. I think when you look at the statistics of this transaction, right, it's a 20-year deal, which puts it at the higher end of an energy transaction. They're paying actually more than they would for other energy. Yeah. They're not building a data center near the nuclear plant. It's all virtual. So I think they're effectively, as your other presenter mentioned, this is an offset from a carbon perspective. So better for the environment, and I think they obviously want to get as much capacity locked up as they can before others get to that, to get to that capacity and energy. So
right.
I mean, there's multiple things to read in here and look at from our side. We've talked to our energy team, and this again goes to the longer end. And longer tail, and obviously they wanted to save this facility, so this obviously gives them a chance to basically take a facility that maybe was going to be shut down to saving it.
Well, as you've heard through the program today, the world's a bit of a difficult place. So what do you do about your investments? Well, here's some wisdom from David Booth. He's a veteran. Sounds a bit to me like Howard Marks and Warren Buffett, their kind of approach. He's the chairman and co-founder of Dimensional Fund Managers, and he's got some words of wisdom.
There's always a lot of uncertainty. And this year, the uncertainty has been kind of elevated a little bit. But, you know, I've been in the business 50-some years, and, you know, every time uncertainty kind of ticks up, people get alarmed. But it's important not to get rush in to make judgments and get at it. In fact, if you look over the last 50 years of my experience, you know, one of the things that makes me sad really is every time the market dips a little bit, people get anxious and get out and then miss out on the upside.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
yeah,
you know, over the long haul, if there are problems, you know, firms address them, get back on track, use a little human ingenuity, and that's what bails us out all the time.
So it sounds like what you're saying, to oversimplify it, is basically just stay invested here.
Well, you always want to pay attention to what's going on, but you know, trying to time short-term moves in the market is kind of a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a waste of time. So, but it's always good to review your long-term investment approach, make sure it's still the right approach for you. And that could, for example, something else, other part of your life, you may cause you to want to make a change in investments. But mm-hmm. just because the market has a little bit of volatility, that's no reason to get out.
Thanks for being with us. Bronwyn will be back with your briefing tomorrow. Until then, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.